want Dick to say something?
Richard, go for it. You're going to say anything? We need to say anything?
Yeah, get it while people are coming there.
Okay, Bob. No, it's G, Bob. That's an old Clancy line.
Yeah, Bob.
Yeah, we're ready to rock and roll here. We're missing a few, but we're not going to worry about that. We're going to open the session with a moment of silence followed by the Serenity Prayer. Thank you. God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, courage to change the things I can,
and the wisdom to know the difference.
I was very conscious of Sandy saying some guys take 10 seconds, and then, so I waited 15. Anyhow, these two wonderful communicators are taking a basket of questions that were submitted by the people that are here today, and they're going to discuss them. So no further ado, I'll just turn it over to them.
Okay, thanks, Dick. Thank you for your help.
Thank you, Richard.
I've been talking all day.
Please explain. We never viewed ourselves as spearheads of God's ever-advancing creation. It's a quote from the Big Book. I don't feel like I'm really connected to that quote. But what I would say about it is simply that he was saying it in reference to agnosticism or atheism, that they were not identified with a sense of our Creator and being identified with the greater plan.
Yeah, that, I can't. I don't know.
Okay. thank you. That's really. I really. I feel more secure about myself
now
that you don't know. That's good. That's good.
I'll take the Oxford group point.
A friend was sharing the other day and kept referring to Christ. Some got offended. What do you say to her?
Do you know the word axiom? You ever heard of the spiritual axiom? If something disturbs you, no matter what the cause, there's something wrong with you. You have the power to not let that word bother you. Once you learn that spiritual lesson, you'll be much freer than you are today.
He does bring a clarity that few have.
When and where did the term sponsor originate? Well, it certainly wasn't around the Big Book. I think Dr. Bob liked to call the people. I mean, it became obvious after a while that everybody wasn't going to get sober by having the Big Book delivered to them, and that the people who had some sobriety could do a faster job. And so that's all I remember, is that Dr. Bob coined the term, but I'm not sure. He also liked to use pigeon, and California likes to use baby, and new people like the term sponsee. Why you insist on sponsee?
My sponsor used jerk.
Boy, we're not doing very good here, Bob.
No, we're struggling. These are tough questions. If there is something missing, We have to get rid of something in order to find what's missing. How do I do that? I think we should do a urine test on the question. I think that if we drug tested everybody, we'd get questions that were easier.
No, I know.
You addressed that, did you not?
I remember saying something like this.
Yes.
We find that we have a sense that something's missing, but we don't know what it is. Everybody had that. They had a hole, there was something missing. And the reason that we just can't look and see the answer to that is that it's being blocked by all of our defects and old ideas that are blocking us from being able to see the truth. So in other words, it's obvious what's missing is a relationship with God, but you can't know that until you work the steps and have it open up and be revealed, and more will be revealed. So this fits in that category, that almost all growth is done by getting rid of something.
Today, Bob said we are surrendered. Do we surrender our defects, or are we surrendered? I think it's a little of both. I think that as we continue to do work in the program, our conscious we become more awake, having had a spiritual awakening. As our consciousness we really can't fundamentally change unless there's an alteration in our consciousness. If how we see things does not change, we will keep doing things consistently with the way we've always done them, which is to the best of our ability under the level of the light and consciousness we have at that moment. As our consciousness increases, some of the things we do that don't work, all of a sudden we start to see them differently. And they become more uncomfortable, and I think the pain and discomfort of our own disapproval and our own unworkability, so it's kind of a combination.
Thank you, sir. If I get into a relationship...
We had a sneak attack someone who...
My specialty...
She wrote it on toilet paper. I don't know what...
If I get into a relationship in early recovery and it did not end up going so well... Well, this is one in a million that this would happen. And did not end up going so well, and has gotten me down on my program. What are some suggestions to get over the relationship and get excited about recovery again?
Half hour answer.
Well, I know what a lot of people think is within the next minute or two, get in another relationship. That's not my answer. Okay, we all know this is painful. It appeared to be a wonderful answer. There's nobody in this room that hasn't fallen victim to this, especially when we were new. And accept the fact that it's painful. Don't fight it. Don't say, I wish it wasn't. These things are painful. This is stopping, and we're going to start something new. And commit yourself to getting as close to your higher power as you can. If in your case that means going out and buying some spiritual books, you have to take an action to show that you're... Join a meditation class. You would never think of doing that. But these actions that you take while you're busy doing this, this has a chance to heal. It doesn't heal if you go home and think about it. That's the worst thing you could do. I'm going to go home and think about it. Well, you might as well. But we're all on your side.
What step brings you closer to God? 1 through 12. I'm not trying to be belittle it. The one you're working on at the moment is is the one that's bringing you closer to God. And the fact that you're doing work means that you have the humility that you need help and you're practicing your program. Or I'm practicing my program.
Good, Bob.
Doesn't say that very often, so I...
For Sandy. Do you want to try it? Please tell about seeking as it relates to the 11th step. And I like the word seeking, and I've got a few routines about that, and I don't know if that's what this is asking for, but I'll do it anyway because we got not that many questions. You see seeking at the end of the three pertinent ideas that God could and would if he were sought. And then we see it in the 11 steps, sought through prayer and meditation. And so it's coming down to what does seeking mean to you? Where would you say your level of seeking is? So it's hard to find a scale. So I'll give you a scale that you can use to measure your own seeking. The first time I heard seeking was in grammar school. And we were going to play a new game called hide and seek. And I went, hide and seek. I don't know that. What is it? Mary's going to hide. You close your eyes. Mary's going to hide. Now you try and find her. Well, I didn't like Mary, so I didn't like the game already. But I said, okay, I'll go along. So Mary hides, and I start looking. And I go, look under here. I look under there. I look under there. It took me about 80 seconds, and I didn't like the game anymore. I was through seeking. Who gives a damn where Mary is? So that was, I would call that a very low, low, low level of seeking. Next seeking was Easter baskets. Ooh. 3 pounds of chocolate waiting with my name on it. We're already at a, you can see we're doubling at least the level of seeking. So my mother puts the baskets away and my sister and I start. And you know, for 15 minutes, you just, but somewhere around 16 or 17 minutes, you go, am I warm? Is it in this room? You start becoming a whiner seeker. Give me a clue. It's hard to stay focused on where the basket is. So by the time she tells you where it is, you go, thank you, and I didn't find it. And so, but it was a way higher seeking than Mary. And then the final level was that we had a golden retriever, and when I was about 16, he ran off in the woods across the street, and my parents said, I don't know, he ran off this morning. We haven't seen him since. And I went out where they told me he went in and called his name till probably 11 o'clock that night, and then the next day I was stood there, and the next day, and the next day. And then I went off to college, and whenever I was home, I would go over there. He could be there. He could still be there. And, 15 years later, when I went home, I always had to go by the woods and just take one last look. He could still be there. That's seeking. That's where I would like to have that feeling about God, that I'm going to go after him with that intensity, because there's so much love involved, and it's on a level that's way different than just taking a casual look and say a little prayer every 3 days. That's not seeking. Okay, Bob.
And I like the I like that seeking does not end. The mind wants an answer, and that ends. You know, question, answer. Seeking, as when we trudge the road of happy destiny, not to happy destiny. You know, so it is the nature of the spiritual walk is that it's never, the nature of is the seeking. How would you handle a sponsee who has taken almost 2 years to write her fourth step and is still writing, obviously is not writing consistently?
Handwriting classes.
Well, first of all, I wouldn't handle her because I don't sponsor hers. I don't know. I mean, it's a balance. We all have sponsees that aren't responsive. Today, the idea is that, you know, there's what I saw when people came in, people did not give you as strong a direction with respect to the steps as I see people doing it today. There's a sense that this is, you know, twice this year, or once this year, I got kind of fired at a sponsee because I leaned a little too hard on someone, and I kind of leaned on them. I wouldn't have leaned on them 2 or 3 years ago, but I'm trying to get in tune with this more structured idea that I'm supposed to get someone through the steps earlier, and I think I overstepped what I was supposed to do. I think it's a personal thing. It's a relationship. If you don't have enough influence in the relationship to influence what's going on, it's not satisfactory for either one of you, and at some point you may reach the conclusion that, you know, I want to be friends, but, you know, I think you got to move on and find someone who you respond to in a different way. There's got to be some verticality, not, you know, and again, reflective of personalities, but there's got to be some verticality in the relationship. If I don't have some, if you don't listen to what I say, if I don't have any sense to influence you, it's a joke. And there's enough things I do poorly, I don't need one more thing to do poorly. I'm serious, and that's what I don't need one more sponsor relationship, and I don't want any more merit badges. When I take someone today, I really want them to want to be in a conversation with me, not to have, oh, I got to call Bob. That I don't want, I got to call Bob.
That was pretty good, buddy.
Oh, thank you.
I heard the babies are being born with thinner skin than they were when you and I were born. How would you address an alcoholic who has the faith in God that he will restore his sanity, remove the obsession, etc., and they chronically relapse but keep coming back? I would be on their side for the fact that they keep coming back. And if your assessment is that they really do have the faith, just it hasn't happened yet. So I think I might sit down and have a discussion and ask them, why do you think it hasn't happened yet? And engage them in a conversation like that. Why do you think it hasn't happened? For most of us, within this time period that you're talking about, and you may find the answer gets revealed right there as you're having that discussion. And they may just say, well, I'm not trying as hard as I could, or whatever. But I would try that.
And the other thing that I find with chronic relapsers, I find at some point it's almost as if they're managing their illness rather than their recovery. They've learned or identified how many times they can get drunk in a period of time. So it's almost like the old periodic. And sometimes if you can bring that to their attention, if that's what you believe, you know, what might be going on.
Hey, smarty pants.
How do you feel about other 12-step programs? I think they're wonderful. I think the adaption of these spiritual principles to issues that people have are fine. We regularly give people permission to use our 12 steps. I've heard numbers like there are 300. I don't know how many there are, but I think it's well over 100 of different programs. My personal experience, I went to Al-Anon for a while, is the effectiveness of my experience in the program depends upon me surrendering at depth. I believe it's difficult to surrender at depth to more than one program. I know people who have done it and done it effectively. It is also common by my observation that people tend to use the second program as a self-improvement program. They don't always get a sponsor. They don't always do 90 and 90. They relate to it differently, like it's this is for my relationship or, you know, whatever it is. But I think almost all of us feel that people using the 12 steps is a smart and an effective and a good thing.
Yep. Wonderful. You have one thing you want to say?
I have, no, I don't.
Okay. It's funny, this question followed that one. What kind of influence do the influx of dual-addicted and drug-addicted alcoholics have on carrying the spiritual message of the 12 steps? So as Bob pointed out, as AA started to evolve, it became apparent that the 12 steps could probably work on any problem a person had. They could be a gambler, a sex addict, an overeater, a drug addict, and all that. And so we have a decision we have to make. Should we make AA all-inclusive so that we would have gamblers, drug addicts, overeaters, etc.? Because the solution's going to work for all of them. Same 12 steps, just plug in your problem. Or should we just be a specialist on one thing? And the decision was made to be an expert on one problem, alcoholism, and to loan the steps out freely to all the other problems that the world has. And it worked for a long time, till the treatment centers came along and said, AA is doing it wrong. They should be including all kinds of addicts because it's all the same. And AA said, no, we disagree. We don't tell you how to run the medical business. Could you leave us alone and we'll have mutual respect for each other? Well, I can show you that this is... And so the poor new person is caught in a trap because the treatment center says, you can go anywhere you want. This stuff's all the same. So you go and somebody says, you know, we don't want you in here. Some old timer who's having a bad day. Well, yeah, wait. So the guy runs out. I hate AA. Look what they did to me. And he's a victim. He didn't want to go cause trouble. He just walked in, was told. So it was a lot easier when, you know, we went on 12-step calls and you picked up the person, you explained everything to him. and you didn't have to unlearn 30 days of treatment center explanations on how the 12 steps work. And so it's a shame that this problem continues to be misunderstood, that we have a tradition and primary purpose gets re-voted on by our delegates every 5 years. And I think the secret is that if a person's having a problem with this, never get yelled at a meeting. That's a terrible, disgraceful thing to do, and for somebody new and go, hey, you know, no matter what it is. Somebody looking for an Al-Anon. This isn't Al-Anon. Get the hell out of here. You know, what kind of way to treat somebody, you know? Gets a couple of old timers and say, come on, we'd like to talk to you, and go out and sit down in the kitchen and explain everything. And this stuff could be worked out really wonderfully so that the person then understands that when he's at AA, he says, I'm an alcoholic. If he goes to NA, he says, I'm an addict. It's just a courtesy thing. This is how you address yourself in these different programs. And I think everything could work out so smoothly if we had the time to be very careful with the new person so they were fully understanding, instead of having these incidents where somebody yells and that's all.
I have a slightly different take on that.
Don't embarrass me, Bob. I was one of the few thin.
That is not my concern, Sandy. My concern is if I have a different take, that I'm a little screwed up. But I have. I'm going to report it anyway. I hope we never test people at the door of AA. I think we're going to hurt our fellowship if we do that. I think the idea that we diagnose ourselves is one of the great tools that we have in alcohol, that you're an alcoholic when you say you're an alcoholic. In the old days, it didn't really depend exactly on what you called yourself. If someone came in, we had many people, we'd say, are you alcoholic? They said, hell no. We say, well, keep coming back. You know, I mean, we would not throw them out of the meeting, you know, because we did that. And today, it is my observation that the purists, I was not a drug taker, but the bourbon-only drinking people are disappearing. And the people that we're getting into, the question is, are the people we're getting in today that are in drugs and alcohol, are they the alcoholics of today? My experience is we are not being invaded by large numbers of people who don't belong. But, no, I don't mean that in any way to be funny. I'm just saying that it is my experience that the people feel like in the meetings, doing the step work and having the conversations, they feel like I felt when I came in. Okay, and there are some people who don't quite feel that way. So it is more complex. It is a muddier track than we have ever seen. So it is, but who we're getting is changing. And the classic bourbon drinking only drunk is less common today. And that's still the person we're the most effective with. Without bar none, do it. So the quote at the end of the spiritual experience by Herbert Spencer, could you please elaborate about before examination?
Contempt
prior to an. I do not have anything to elaborate on. Contempt prior to investigation is just a poor process. It's, you know, making up your mind with no information. It's just kind of an opinion, you know. I don't. And it's a bar against, you know, learning. I think it's fairly explanatory to the point that it addresses in the book.
My statement on that when I was new was, I'm not going to pray because I know it won't work for me. And I had a whole bunch of statements that went like that, and so do a lot of new alcoholics. I can tell ahead of time that won't work. Now, after you've been sober a long time, you really can do that. Only kidding.
He hits the big 5-0 in December, then he doesn't have to ask anybody.
No, next December.
What?
This is 49 this year. I got one more year. Then.
Then he doesn't have to consult anybody.
All restraints are off after that.
Yeah. You can drink when you're out of town. I mean, it is there. I forget what all the rules are, but I mean, it's really cool. I might be wrong on that.
Let me put it this way. To someone brand new, being told they can drink after 50 years is not good news. Okay, when the promises are read in the meeting and the question comes up, are these extravagant promises, we think not is chanted. That's true. Is that the AA way to chant, we think not? Where did that originate from? St. Paul, Minnesota.
It is.
Sandy, I think it's terrible, all this chanting stuff we're starting to stick in.
But we are becoming people of the ritual. When I came in, we didn't hold hands. Now we hold hands, and now we do the break dance and the chant, and we do. I mean, we do. And the other thing that drives me nuts are these crop circles. You know, I mean, you know, at the end of the meeting, everybody gets together with a crop circle. We've got people in to say the prayer, and it takes them 4 or 5 minutes because we have 2 or 3 crippled people and we have wheelchairs and we somehow think that if to form a circle with 400 people in a room, I mean, it is just nuts. Dr. Jack Norris, who was on the board, was the chairman of the board of trustees when I was in, he was very concerned about ritualism in Alcoholics Anonymous because it was one of the dominant features in the Washingtonian movement. And it is, and we are looking weirder. I mean, the people that come in here, I mean, you know, it is, and then they go, you know, and do we have announcements? And all the young people go, announcements, ooh. Or, you know, and you hold up the big book, and they go, oh. I mean, there are meetings, literally, I'm telling you, that they have little inflections for everything that you do. Now, if you're an adult, you know, I mean, if you're 15, you come in and you turn your head sideways and you join the crowd. But if you're 50 and you come in and you look at that, wow, I mean, it is weird.
I didn't answer this yet.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Obviously, this... when I came in, there were no promises. If you had asked people, what are the promises? They go, I don't know. I don't know what you're talking about. And then I think in the 70s, some guy somewhere said, hey, here's some promises. So then they were called the promises. And then they're on plastic. Once they get on plastic, you're... Oh, I'm sorry, you're in trouble. So then somebody found the 5th-step promises, the 10th-step promises, the this, and the, you know, and they read different promises to close the meeting. So I'll tell you what the final promise is, and it's never going to come true. You will surely meet some of us as you trudge the road of happy destiny. They're all dead. You're not going to meet them. That promise will never come true, so I hope that doesn't disappoint you, but... So once it got on plastic, it had to be read. Let's read the promises. What promises? Right here on plastic.
Oh.
Now, my response is, are these extravagant promises? We think not. They are extravagant promises. They're beyond extravagant. The only reason that we can say they're not is because God's doing them. For him, it's not extravagant. So it's too bad that we are. We're getting all this stuff. Who's in charge? Who brought you here? Yellow cab. How's that?
Who walks on the rivers and saves our livers? What is meant by the tradition? Anonymity is the spiritual foundation of all our traditions.
That's a good one.
I think it refers to incorporate the principles in the traditions in our life, in our affairs, and in our structure of Alcoholics Anonymous, I think takes an institutional and organizational humility. And the core at the center of anonymity is not having personal recognition for things that we do and for our roles in our fellowship. So I think anonymity in that case is almost synonymous with humility. Humility is subjugating what we're doing, you know, the true spirit of service, as I see it.
Beautiful. Beautiful. I don't know. Who's the guy on page 80? I'm sure it's one of the early... Somebody knows, whoever wrote this question. Is this one of these stories where you've got the milk and the... put the shot of whiskey in the milk?
Jim or Fred or...
I don't know the book by page, so I'm sorry. Here we go. Bob will know it. Oh, is this the guy that made amends in the church?
Oh, I heard that was Bill Dixon. Bill Dodson.
Dodson? Okay. We're going to guess Bill Dodson.
I was told that, but I don't know for a fact that that's true. Yeah. I'd like to make a call.
Okay.
Can a person who is sober and 20 years recovered but doesn't go to AA meetings speak at a meeting or serve on committees, PIC, PC committees? My quick answer, if you put a gun to my head, is yes. They're a member. Of Alcoholics Anonymous. There are people that go to meetings regularly that are jerks and you would not want on the committee. There are people who do not attend regularly that have great qualities and would be beneficial to a committee. But generally, to be on a committee, you have to be elected or appointed. And so that would be indicative of some group conscious effect for that person to be on the committee. And if it's reflective of the group conscience, I think that answers the point.
Good. You did better than I would have. Do you continue to sponsor people who slip? Yes. If it continues for a period of time and I think they might do better with someone else, I might go find someone else ahead of time who I think would be good and then have a meeting with the three of us and say, I'm going to turn you over to Frank because he has a little different style than I do, and I think it's going to give you a better shot, et cetera, et cetera. Sometimes, you know, if we knew how to get sober, everybody who came to AA, holy cow, but we haven't learned how to do that yet. It's up to God who gets sober. I know that sounds crazy, but that's what Bill said in the chapter to the wives. If your husband isn't sober yet, God hasn't removed the desire to drink. Okay.
How do I keep the first three steps alive in my life, not deviate from my foundation? The steps are something we read, the steps are something we study, and the steps end up being part of the fabric of who we be and who we are. The steps have to do with doing, you know, have to do with being, not doing. They are spiritual in nature. I think it's being conscious of the first three steps, of the fact of my powerlessness, my need to find, you know, my belief in a power greater than myself, and my sense of the fact that I've made a decision to put my will in my life, my thoughts and my actions in connection with that power. And if we find ourselves disconnected from that, I would say just start doing a little reading, pay attention to it. We are what we fill ourselves full of. And usually what we fill ourselves full of is the noise of the day. And if we would start, you know, if we want to make that more important, I think we just start paying attention to it.
Good man.
How much time do we have?
All day. All day.
15 minutes.
15 minutes, okay.
10 for me, 5 for you.
It just seems that way. What did Bill mean? More will be revealed. The 12 by 12 is one example. Another people experience on a, can you read this on daily driving? I'm sorry, it's just the handwriting. I can't get it exactly.
One example and another people experience or daily living is another, maybe your thoughts.
More will be revealed. It is. I would say that this is one of the very few areas where expectations are okay. Normally, I have nothing good to say about expectations, but expecting things to be revealed is putting faith in prayer and meditation and spirituality and listening to God. And so I think it helps to expect it. Of course I'm going to find something that's going to be revealed. You make that as much of your life as you can and shift away from I'll figure it out. Got a problem here, I'll go think about it and figure it out. Stop doing that. Let go of it. And just sit and see if something gets revealed. In other words, you have to set the stage for it to happen. I mean, it can happen in the middle of someone else's talk when they cover a point that just clarifies something for you beautifully. It was just revealed to you. It was just, nobody else in the audience had that same thing. But I believe that you must decide that this is what you're going to attempt to rely on, is this way of life where things are revealed And I think it's the most wonderful thing in the world. It's so exciting to have something occur to you rather than to think it up. And it's also, in other words, they both happen inside of you, but one's happening at a higher level than just thinking. So it's still you. But if you're not up here, you're going to get answers that are just not quite as good as this one. And as Bill said, the good is the biggest enemy of the best that there is. Okay.
That was wonderful. Question for Bob with 1-0. How do I open
1-0?
That's important. I mean,
otherwise it'd be oboe.
How do I open myself up for a spiritual solution to being a failure at my job? I'm 3.5 years sober, adequately capable, and I'm using all my willpower to overcome what looks like sloth on the outside, fear, self-centeredness on the inside, to absolutely no avail. I can't read that word. Acute financial insecurity. Suicidal thanks. I think you're doing better than Sandy. No. When I don't know if the person who hearing that has heard my AA talk, I had serious work issues. I had trouble getting to work, I had trouble staying at work, I had trouble working at work. I had no idea what this was about. I was unable to effectively deal with that issue until I was 7.5 years sober. I had done 3 passages through the steps and unable to do it. It was after my 3rd, 5th step, of which I had inventoried fear, that I discovered that I was afraid of being a husband, a father, a worker. I was afraid of failure and I was afraid of success. That was invisible to me. I did not know it. When I made the change, when I had the change at 7.5 years and I surrendered and I took step 6 at a depth that I had not taken them before, when I came into AA, I stood naked in front of my alcoholism and the truth changed me, which I think happens to all of us in that surrender process. At 7.5 years, I stood naked in front of my life. And I was able to tell myself truths about my failure and about my incompetency and about my defects of character. And my ego, the surrender, which comes with ego collapse, is different than the self-pity that we swim in when we are immobilized. That is of ego. That is of self. I was always able to do in a funny sort of way is I do AA. I could perform and attend to any responsibility you gave me in AA. Not the responsibility God gave me in AA, but the responsibility you gave me in AA. I made work an AA issue. It no longer mattered whether I was afraid. It no longer mattered whether I wanted to. I would take the big book on a sales call. I never made sales calls. I just phonied up my activity report. I never even took the chance. You dragged me across the desk and forced me to sell you something because I wasn't there. Okay. But at that point, it didn't matter what I thought, what I cared about, whether I was afraid or not afraid. I committed myself to doing it as an AA activity. It no longer, and that, I think, is what surrender is. That is what I think, because my personal considerations and the fact that I wasn't taking care of my wife and I wasn't taking care of my children and all the sort of, things. And if you want to talk to me afterwards or somewhere in the process, I've lived this.
Thank you, Bob. That was great. Oh, boy, this is a wonderful question. What exactly does decision mean in step three? This is big deal. This is a big deal. It is a very powerful word. I'll use the analogy of you've gotten sober, and because of your drinking, you didn't finish college. And as you get sober, you say to yourself, you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to finish college. And a year later, you say to yourself, you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to finish college. This is thinking about college. There's no decision yet. When you decide to go to college, you go out and register, you give them money, you buy all the books, you are enrolled. There's a whole process when you make a decision. It's a commitment. It's no longer, I think it would be nice to turn my life over. I think decision is going to be followed by action. And, of course, the action, we're taking the rest of the steps, but you also might get spiritual books. You might start finally going to a meditation class. You're not going to live the way you've used to. This is a big deal, making a decision. And so I'm glad you asked that. It's a very important thing, because some people just get to that step and just go, that's good, turning your life over. I like that idea. Well, that's not a decision. You have to really sit down and think of it. Do you really want to do this? You don't. And, of course, the ego is talking you out of it. You don't want to do it. How do you know it'll work? You better, run. So this takes a lot of commitment to do this, and then immediately we go through the rest of the steps and our life gets turned over when we suddenly realize that God's doing for us what we couldn't do for ourselves.
And at T. Henry and Clarice Williams' house, in order to attend the meeting downstairs, you had to go upstairs and make a decision. You had to take a third step. And when the book talks about, if you want to come talk to us, if you want to tell your story or make a decision, I mean, today we kind of think it's just a mental thing. But they used it as an action.
Yes.
It was much more operative.
One more question each, and it'll be quarter after.
Okay, how did Bill Wilson treat his depression? What do recovering alcoholics do today? I think we get disappointed in the humanness of Bill Wilson because he has reached the level of almost sainthood within our fellowship. If we would not elevate him to the status of sainthood, we could allow him to be an extraordinary vehicle and man that he was, and just take a look at the gifts what was processed through Bill Wilson. I always thought it was astounding when he looked at Father Dowling, and I forget the word, Sandy may know the words, and he said, will I ever be comfortable? And Dowling said, no.
Right.
That's not... Your discomfort is of God. No. It's divine discomfort. Your drive, your vision, what you're seeing, your dis-ease is what is sourcing you. And Dowling, of course, was a student of religion and knew of other spiritual people who had divine discomfort. And Bill searched, we used to take vitamin shots down at the downtown club. For a buck, we'd get in line, they'd jab us in the butt, and we'd take, so he did, niacin, and he did vitamin B12 therapy, and he did some other things with those doctors up in Canada, and he was always, you know, kind of looking for stuff. He was a spiritual searcher. But I think he reached peace. I think in his later life, he was relieved of his depression. He had about a 12-year period where he was, you know, suffering from depression. Today, when I came in AA, we thought depression was a psychological issue, a symptom of an underlying deal. Most people today think it's a chemical imbalance. Okay, it is, you know, it is no longer the fact that you got a bad program. I mean, I happen to think with the men that I see that it's with men over 50, it's one of the most serious issues that I see in recovery. And we ought to stop being afraid of it. And what do we do today? I mean, some people use medication, some people use the program, and some of us just live with it. I have a tendency to depression, and it is what it is. It comes and goes.
I'm just going to add something that Bob's perfect answer there, that one of the things Bill did was write the 12 and 12 during the worst depression that he ever had. He kept working on it. And in step 11, where he said, sometimes you might be seized with a rebellion so strong you refuse to pray. He's talking about himself. And so he's a very human hero. I love Bill Wilson's humanness and the fact that he was struggling just like we are. But he didn't quit. And he finished the 12 and 12. And I think his depression ended when he turned AA over to the delegates and the trustees. And finally, because up until then, he was it. Every problem that AA had, they came to Bill. What are we going to do about this? What are we going to do about that? And everywhere he went, he couldn't just be an AA member. There was everybody, they want to talk to him. I want to tell you, you know, can you write this and that? So I just wanted to add.
And I want to, I'm sorry, I'm going to read one thing. This is a letter that Bill Wilson wrote.
Oh, yeah.
Mel. In my role as Mr. AA, I've been able to manage fairly well. But as a neurotic drunk trying to get along and grow, I have often been pathetically rebellious and rationalized. Practically all the sins I didn't have time for when drinking, I have time for in the last 12 years of my life, despite all my blessings and opportunities, I have spent 8 years in depression, sometimes very severe ones. However, there has been profit for AA even in this state of affairs. The depression's kept me off the road. Bill was not accepting talking engagements, very few, and for making speeches. In fact, I was forced to sit home and ask what would become of AA and what would become of the result of the 12 traditions of Alcoholics Anonymous and the present world service structure. And maybe I grew up a little myself. Also, at any rate, let's hope.
Wow, thank you. Thank you, everybody. We'll see you. You want to lead us in the Lord's Prayer? Sure.
We're going to say the Lord's Prayer.